Welcome back to Prophecies of Health and Hope. Today we're going to be studying another exciting prophecy, looking not only at the prophecy, but the health implications of the prophecy, the practical application of the prophecy in our lives. And today we're going to look at Daniel chapter 8, which actually contains the longest Bible prophecy, but we're going to see how it relates to your health. This prophecy is 2,300 years long, and you can see it there on the screen, starting about 500 years before Christ and then going to the middle of the 1800s afterwards. And this prophecy has amazing health implications. In fact, as people have studied the Bible, the Pentateuch specifically, the Old Testament, first five books of the Old Testament, they have found references to health promotion in the Code of Hammurabi and also Mosaic Law, and references that refer to disease prevention, disposal of waste, segregation, or you might say quarantine of infectious persons, including those suffering from leprosy. And it also encouraged a weekly day of rest for health as well as religious reasons, and recognized that eating certain things like pork could result in illness. So all of this is alluded to in Daniel chapter 8, which this prophecy, this large prophecy, talks about the Day of Atonement, or so-called Yom Kippur. On this day, the Day of Judgment, every believer was encouraged to totally search their hearts for things that separated them from God and from one another. And then also, it was seen as the ultimate day of cleansing that would then bring people into community. So the Day of Atonement was the most important day within a wider circle or a context, which included what a person ate, what they drank, whatever they did. So again, this was pictured in Daniel chapter 8, but also in the first five books of the Bible, especially the book of Leviticus. Now, when you look at these first five books of the Bible, when we look at the Bible as a whole, the sanctuary factors big. This temple or tent, or however it was configured at the time, where God came to dwell with his people, was the center of what he was doing. Let them make me a sanctuary that I might dwell among them. So this sanctuary was huge. In the Pentateuch, you might have 40 chapters dealing with it. In the Psalms, you might have 40 chapters dealing with it. You have it all throughout the New Testament, and it's alluded to again and again. Now, in the sanctuary, they had a daily service. And in this daily service, it took place in the outer court, right there where that altar is and the laver is, all of those things in the daily service. People would bring, Leviticus chapter 4, they would bring a lamb or another sacrificial animal. They would confess their sins over it specifically, and then they would hand it over to the sanctuary service to be taken care of. And this happened every day. Representatives from the different families would come to the sanctuary, which was in the middle of the camp. And then there was a process where it would move forward in that daily service. They would bring it to the entrance. The priest would then take it. It would take the blood of the animal. Well, actually, they would take the animal itself and sacrifice it. Then the blood of the animal was taken into the first apartment or the holy place. And this happened every day. You might say that the sin and disease and the pollution of Israel was transferred from the individual, from the family, to the sanctuary service, kind of to God's laboratory to get rid of sin and suffering. And at that time, once that transfer was done every day, then the sanctuary, you could say, became polluted with the disease of sin. And the camp was seen as clean. They had handed it over to God and let him deal with it. And by the way, this is something we always need to do, because we can't handle sin ultimately. Only God can handle it. It's a problem that only he can solve. And so this is what they were saying. They were handing it over to God and to the sanctuary. Then it was there lingering for about a year. But was that sin and was that impurity to remain in the sanctuary forever? No. it was to ultimately be gotten rid of. And this happened on the Day of Atonement, Leviticus 16, 16. The day of at one, you might say, is what it meant. And not only did the sin move in daily, you know, the pollution moved in, but then on this Day of Atonement, there was a procedure where the sin had been covered, was then gotten rid of on the Day of Atonement. And the solution to the pollution occurred as a result of rituals that spoke to the reality that the most holy place would be cleansed and that the altar of incense would be cleansed, and then the altar in the courtyard would be cleansed, the courtyard would be cleansed, and then ultimately the entire sanctuary itself would be completely cleansed. The people, the temple, those who worship there, they all would be cleansed. And this was the ideal of God, where he wanted not only the people cleansed, but also the sanctuary itself completely cleansed. And this is the picture that's given in Daniel chapter 8. In Daniel chapter 8, there's a shift. In Daniel chapter 7, we studied, it started out with unclean beasts. We're going to understand more what that means. In other words, beasts and unclean things that were kept away from God's sanctuary and himself. But in Daniel chapter 8, there are clean beasts, goats and rams. And these were the actual animals that were used on the Day of Atonement. The Day of Atonement, animals of the goat, the ram, are pictured in Leviticus chapter 16. And the promise there in Daniel chapter 8 was at the end of time, when the 2300-day prophecy was complete. In other words, 2300 Day of Atonements after Daniel's day, and that has only happened once a year. So 2300 years later, there would be a cleansing message that came right at the time of the end. So let's just read that text, that key text from Daniel chapter 8, but let's just ask God to join us as we study now more fully the scriptures today. Father in heaven, bless us today as we study, as we read your word. Help us to understand it, not only the overview of the prophecy which we've looked at, but how it can apply in our own lives. In Christ's name, amen. So, these clean beasts, the Day of Atonement animals, and then the promise. And here was the promise that we're basically going to unpack today. Unto 2,300 days, or in other words, Day of Atonements, one a year, 2,300 years, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. So ultimately, God had this ritual that was day by day and year by year in the Old Testament sanctuary system, but that was applied to actually the history of the world, and he wanted to cleanse the entire world, and he had a prophetic timeline to do that. Now, like we said, the book of Leviticus is right in the center of what we call the Pentateuch. Genesis, Exodus, then right in the middle, Leviticus, and then Numbers and Deuteronomy. And right in the center of the center of the book of Leviticus is chapter 16. And chapter 16 is what talks about that day of cleansing that was alluded to by that text in Daniel chapter 8, verse 14. So to really understand this day of cleansing, we have to understand what the Pentateuch, or those first five books of the Bible, say about cleansing. What do they say about cleansing physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually? So let's look a little closer at the positioning of the book of Leviticus, and actually what Leviticus itself talks about, and then we'll look at the first five books of the Bible with the health message back then that can apply to us today. Now, in Leviticus itself, in chapter 10, it talked about having clean drinks, no alcohol, water, clean drinks, clean meat, or there are certain foods that's to be preferred over and against others. And if people just knew this today, there would be not as many of the viruses and the flus and different things we have. Ever heard of the swine's flu? The Bible says don't eat swine. And other types of diseases, people eating bats and monkeys and things, clean meat. Leviticus chapter 12, cleanliness after giving birth. So being very careful when you're giving birth, after you give birth. We know that today, There are birthing centers and hospitals and procedures that take care of this, hand washing after birth and whatnot. All those things were covered in the Old Testament. Clean skin. This is almost a dermatology text in Leviticus 13 and 14. Clean up leprous homes. In fact, they had quarantine laws. If you had leprosy, if you had some kind of disease, you had to stay outside the camp, or you had to stay outside the camp, first of all, for 14 days and then another. Recently, in a pandemic that went around the world, they said 15 days at home and then 15 more days at home. Where did they get these ideas? Well, I don't know exactly where they got them, but the Bible talked about them thousands of years before. And then this led all the way to the ultimate day of cleansing. Clean drink, clean meat, clean childbirth things, clean skin, quarantine methods until people got over leprosy and other diseases, and cleaning up bodily discharges all led to this day of cleansing. Now, it's often, we talk about this in terms of, you know, kind of a salvation thing, and it's kind of more intellectual, but isn't this quite practical? Whatever you eat, whatever you drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God, is how the Apostle Paul would put it. And that's a summary, really, of what we find in the Pentateuch. All of these physical things leading to the ultimate day of cleansing. And so the Bible says, fear God and give Him glory. Give Him glory with your body, whatever you eat, whatever you drink, whatever you do. Then following this ultimate day of cleansing, the Day of Atonement that we're talking about, the book of Leviticus continues and applies it. Don't eat blood. There are certain sexual practices that are unclean. It actually spells out what you should do and who you should do it with and who you should not do it with in Leviticus chapter 18. And if you actually just follow Leviticus 18, we would have none of these sexually transmitted diseases we have today. Leviticus 19, social laws of loving one another with a clean heart. And then Leviticus chapter 20, the land will vomit out the unclean. In other words, if you break the clean versus unclean, the land itself will vomit you out. In other words, there'll be disease and there'll be death as a cause and effect relationship. And then ultimately, it applies it to the church. Have a clean church leadership. How many think that's kind of cool? In other words, the Old Testament, the Pentateuch, those first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the book of Leviticus, right in the middle, is telling us how to live a clean life. So let's look now at the health implications of that Leviticus context, or those first five books. You go back to Genesis and you find the original diet was what? And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seeds. To you it shall be for food. So here you have the original diet, the cleanest diet, the best diet, the diet for the created creatures, and it's fruits, nuts, grains, and later vegetables. The original diet is a plant-based diet, things grown from seeds, like we learned back in Daniel chapter 1. And what are the nutrition facts concerning this? If you eat this original diet, you don't have much saturated fat. You do have some fat. Most of it's carbohydrates, and then 15% protein, which is a lot less than most of us get when we have all kinds of high-protein foods that kind of overwhelms us. So this is a very good diet. If you add in the seeds, nuts and seeds, you do have a little bit more fat from that, but it is a plant-based fat. And again, very high in carbohydrates. Now, did you realize that this diet, the original diet, actually has been shown to be the best diet to prevent, and it's best to prevent disease, stop disease when it occurs, and even in some cases, many cases, as we find at the New Start program here at Weimar, many cases actually reverses diseases. And it's as if the American Cancer Society and others, they can't do any better than just take pictures of the foods that are mentioned in this first chapter of the Bible in Genesis. Fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables. Now, even though that was the optimal diet, of course, people ate the forbidden fruit. I don't know why they call it an apple they ate. I don't think you can document that. And of course, I kind of take it personally with my name being McIntosh, but I'll get over it. But anyway, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 1 through 6, you see how they kind of disregarded this original diet. And this is what the snake said to Eve. "Hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? You shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods." And so the serpent came and tempted Eve and said, look, he's trying to keep you away from something that will help you get high, help you get most high. In fact, get as high as he is. You'll have as much knowledge and this and that. So you could say that Satan was the first drug pusher. He said, look, if you eat this, you're going to get high. In fact, you're going to get most high. And so Eve ate the fruit, then gave it to Adam, who followed that leadership with a conscious decision. They ate the fruit and severed their covenant relationship with God, you know, where they were living within his covenant and within his will, severed that. So all of the rest of the Bible is talking about reclaiming heaven's covenant. So how are they going to recover the covenant? Well, one of the things we see in the Old Testament is that they would be restored through the rite of circumcision. He that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you. Every man, child in your generations, he that is born in the house or bought with money of any stranger, which is not thy seed. So not just the Hebrews, but everyone who was working for them or associated with them had this symbolic circumcision. Now circumcision, you study it, it essentially arose at the time when Abraham decided not to follow God's will and way and slept with someone who was not his wife to have a seed that would go on. And his name was Ishmael. And for 13 years, he thought that had solved the problem. And then he asked God, he said, look, would that Ishmael would walk and serve before you. And God said, no, I gave you a covenant promise that you would have a child with Sarah and Sarai. And so Sarai and Abraham had not believed the covenant. They'd gone out on their own, but he said, no, we got to go back. And sure enough, she became pregnant and they had Isaac. And it was at that time, of course, where this rite of circumcision was instituted. And it was as if God was saying, hey, look, I am going to do surgery on the most intimate aspect of your anatomy so that every time you see that, you'll recognize it was by my grace that you had this child, that I am the one that saved you, not by your works, but my grace. So circumcision. Now, an interesting thing about circumcision, is they talk about it in Holt's Diseases of Infancy and Childhood by Holt and McIntosh, they find that there's a coagulation vitamin, an anti-hemorrhage factor, is called vitamin K, that's produced, but it's not really produced in sufficient quantities to stop bleeding until days 5 through 7. And in fact, on the 7th day or the 8th day is when the Bible said a child should be circumcised. Every man child in your generations be circumcised on the 8th day. He that is born in your house or bought with money of any stranger, not thy seed. The 8th day happens to be the time when the amount of prothrombin is elevated above 100% of normal. And it's the only day in a man's life in which this will be the case under normal conditions. If surgery is to be performed, day 8 is the perfect day to do it. Vitamin K and prothrombin levels are at their peak. So isn't this interesting? God prescribed this, but he also allowed there to be the clotting factors that were necessary so that there would not be a hemorrhaging or people bleeding to death as a result. Well, what about circumcision itself? American Academy of Pediatrics talks about circumcision being a normal procedure performed on most newborns in the United States and looks at it very positively, although some have maybe called it into question. They looked at it again in 2010. And basically it says that there's a decreased risk of urinary tract infections, some kinds of cancer, human papillomavirus, and than HIV and other sexually transmitted disease. Globally, about 30% of men are circumcised, although rates range drastically from country to country. So, a very interesting thing, talking about restoring the covenant, circumcision as well. Let's look further. In Deuteronomy 28, 58 through 60, it says, "If you do not carefully follow all the words of the book of this law, which are written in this book, and do not revere this glorious and awesome name, the Lord your God, what's going to happen? If you don't listen to the things written in the Pentateuch, what will happen? The Lord will send fearful diseases on you and your descendants, harsh and prolonged disasters, severe and lingering illnesses. He will bring upon you all the diseases of Egypt that you dreaded, that they may cling to you." So what's going to happen if you don't follow God's will and His way? You're going to get plagues on you and your descendants, and you would get all the what? The diseases of Egypt. So in other words, following what God has said in the Pentateuch concerning cleanliness and health will save you actually from getting some of the diseases of Egypt. Now, what exactly were those diseases of Egypt? Well, they've studied many of the mummies, 30,000, 40,000 of the mummies, maybe a few of the daddies as well. So they studied these mummies, and they looked at the diseases. In fact, they put the mummies in CAT scan machines and whatnot, and they discovered that heart disease was found in the Egyptian mummies. Hardening of the arteries has been detected, and some as old as 3,500 years ago. So the factors causing heart disease and stroke are not just modern ones. They afflicted the ancient people too. And this is the picture that's given in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So they know what these diseases were. But maybe you can help me with diagnosing some of these other diseases. Dia means through. Gnosis means to know. And this fascinating book by Carol Reeves, Egyptian Medicine, that I bought years ago at the British Museum, went through some of the diseases the Egyptians had. So let's see how you do. What's the problem with this person? What kind of disease do they have? Someone might say, well, you know, they don't have enough strings on their harp. One person said, look at their ear. They have a cardiac crease. There's a crease in their ear that says they have heart disease. But I think the obvious answer is what? A person is struggling with overweight, with obesity. And this was a prevalent problem among the upper classes of Egypt, and it was driving many diseases just like it does today in America. Here's another picture looking at one of those mummies. Can you see those arrows there? What's the problem here? Someone once said, well, look, the person got shot with three arrows. No, that's just arrows pointing to what's going on there. And that is, if you said it, if you thought it, you're correct if you said gallstones. So here's a picture of someone's gallbladder, and they have gallstones. Of course, where do gallstones come from? Where is it that you get all of that buildup? It's actually from eating a high-fat diet, and it gets consolidated in those gallstones. Well, what about this one? What's the problem here? I've had a lot of answers on this one. Someone said the guy has no eyeballs, he has no nose. One physical therapist said he has temporal mandibular joint disorders. No, it's not those. It's actually the teeth. Look at the teeth. And there are some dental caries there. And what it said in the text of this book was that this was a very affluent person, a mummy from one of the mummies that was preserved. And they had their teeth, but because they had high sugar drinks, they had many dental caries that developed as well. And this would be consistent with a high sugar diet today even, and probably would be contributing to things like diabetes, etc. What's this picture? You can see the arrows again there in different places. You can see those fingers that are hanging down between those two large bones, the femurs. But then there's this kind of an arrow there that's actually looking at the blood vessels that you still can see after thousands of years You can still see the blood vessels, and you can see that they're calcified. They have calcifications. In other words, they were struggling with heart disease and athero, or hardening, sclerosis, hardening of the arteries, atherosclerosis. So look at this. They had obesity. They had diabetes. They had gallbladder problems. They had probably hypertension. They had hardening of the arteries. Does this sound familiar? It's the same diseases that we have today. And the Bible says if you follow the health rules that are in the Pentateuch, you will clean up your life. You actually clean out your arteries. You clean out all kinds of things, and you'll have health. They also studied the toilets. This is not an Egyptian toilet, but just reminding me. And in the toilets, they discovered that in some sections, in the very affluent sections, there were all kinds of parasites and things that were related to eating pork or eating flesh foods. And they were not in the area of the Hyksos, that is the people that were the Hebrews, where they had all kinds of fruit pectins and all kinds of things consistent with fruits, nuts, and grains. So, nutrition and circumcision we've looked at. We also got something else in the Old Testament, the Pentateuch. What about sanitation and sewage? Thou shalt have a place also outside the camp, whither thou shalt go forth abroad. And thou shalt have a paddle upon thy weapon, and it shall be when thou wilt ease thyself abroad, thou shalt dig therewith, and shalt turn back and cover that which cometh from thee. Well, basically what are they saying? If you go to the bathroom, go outside the camp, dig a pit, go into the pit, and then cover it up. It's an early sanitation system. Right now, what we do normally is hit a button or a lever and things are flushed, but where does that go? Through a pipe system, into a septic system, and it's buried outside your camp, outside your house. And all this was seen thousands of years ago in the Old Testament, how to keep yourself away from fecal material that also can have all kinds of disease and can introduce all kinds of disease to others. Isn't this fascinating? Cleansing in the Old Testament and this whole idea which was alluded to by that text, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. How do you keep things clean? We're learning together. Now, of course, in some cultures they had the baths. These are some Roman baths there that we were visiting in England. Many people would come, and the Romans would build these baths. And in the baths, of course, many different people would be there at the same time, and they would have all kinds of disease that was passed on and on and on. And we're learning that now more today. So they have chlorine in water. They switch the water. They test the water if there's many people together, because we recognize the danger of these things. Now, you know, before we go on to how God removed these diseases, I might just say, I didn't put a section in here, but maybe even more interesting right now are the quarantine laws, where people had to, who were sick, had to be taken and quarantined. And we've learned that when you have a communicable disease that goes in an epidemic or pandemic fashion, that quarantine still is a very effective thing, but it was something that was seen first of all, or maybe not first of all, but at least thousands of years ago in the ancient text of the Bible. So how did God remove these diseases, these common diseases that we have? Well, what he actually ran was the New Start lifestyle program, you might say. He actually called it the Exodus program. But he had the people leave Egypt, and he then began to change all kinds of things. They had fallen into the cultural customs and practices concerning what they ate and what they drank and what they did of the Egyptians. And so he wanted to take them out of there. In fact, the program was called Exodus. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So the Exodus program, X means out, Odas means the measured way, the metered measured way out. So whenever you see an exit sign that came from the book of Exodus, getting out of the building. But in this particular case, God is getting them out of the diseases, the death-causing diseases and plagues of Egypt. And he said, look, you're not going to have these diseases. So they cried out to him. This is what they said. The children of Israel groaned because of bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God. Many times when things are going well, or maybe, you know, semi-well, we don't cry out. But when we get sick, when we are not at ease, when we are at dis-ease, we begin to cry out. And the same thing happened to them. They begin to cry out. They begin to groan. And their cry came up to God. And so what did God say? Well, what did he do? Well, he sent Moses to help them come out. Now, Moses had already come out of Egypt 40 years before, and he had been at this mountain, Mount Sinai, and God had blessed him, taught him many things, and then he sent him back. He sent him back to bring the others out of Egypt, and he provided a promise that would go with them as they were coming out of Egypt. And it's found in Exodus 15, verse 26. If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who does what? Heals you. You know, here at Weimar we have this saying, our role, our purpose, our function, our mission is to heal our hurting world. But really, that's not our goal. That's not what we're called to do. That's God's role. That's his vision, what he's called to do. And we just want to join him in that. And notice, if you just listen to the voice of the Lord your God and heed it, which means not just hear about it, but actually do it. If you hear about what you're supposed to eat and then eat it. If you hear about what you're supposed to drink, then drink it. If you hear about what you're supposed to do, then do it. I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Quite a promise, a big promise. And in fact, you know, when people come here to the New Start program and our programs here, we actually have research that shows that they're going to get better. Not everyone, but a large percentage is going to get better. If they have diabetes, it's going to be stopped, it's going to be reversed. If they have hypertension, it's going to be stopped, it's going to be reversed. If they have obesity, they're going to lose weight as they exercise. If they can't walk, and they're going to be able to walk. Many times we see this. These people coming with maybe 10, 20, 30 medications, and they get off all of them. Not everybody, but a large percentage. And this is why people come from around the world. So how did God run the program? Well, first of all, he took a history, and he began to confront the errors in their lives through education. You know, this is exactly what we do during the New Start program. We start dealing with some cognitive distortions, some errors that people have been told about what they should eat, what they should drink, what they should do. And our minds are many times filled with ideas that just are not true. Now, the ancient Egyptians, they worshipped the river. The Egyptians believed that the Nile was the bloodstream of the god Osiris, and that there was healing in his body fluids. And so they would go down and they would wash in the Nile, which was, of course, quite filthy, and they get all kinds of diseases. And so God says, okay, you believe that the river is what heals you. I'm going to turn that into blood. You said it's the bloodstream of your God. Let me just turn it into that. And suddenly they were no longer interested in going down to the river. He was beginning to clear up the distortions in their minds concerning their ideas of health. They also worshipped frogs. You know, we have stories about how the cow jumped over the moon. They had stories about how the frog jumped over the moon. And the frog was a goddess of fertility. She was believed to be the wife of the creator of the world. And it was an offense to actually kill a frog because they were sacred. And so they worshipped essentially the frogs. I once preached a sermon when I was a young man and lived in Michigan, and I was in St. Joseph, Michigan, and I remember I preached a sermon called The Day That God Jumped Into Bed. And I remember one of the ladies there saying, this is not going to be a good sermon. But anyway, I talked about the frogs and how they worship them. And God said, okay, if you believe the frogs are God, then let's have the frogs go everywhere that God should go. And so the frogs went into the bedrooms, and the frogs went into the kitchens and into the kneading bowls and everywhere. And pretty soon, when the frogs showed up everywhere, everywhere God should be, the people said, wait a minute, we don't want God. We don't want the frog in that area. And so the frogs begin to die, and they begin to do the unthinkable, and that is to get rid of their false gods in all the areas of their house. You see, God was clearing up cognitive distortions, errors that they had. They also worshiped bugs. The Egyptians worshiped the earth, and no Egyptian priest could officiate if he was defiled by bugs or lice. But they also looked at the scabbard beetle and other things, and they had great reverence for them. And so God confronted that as well. Well, we could go through all the plagues. There were 10 of them, but let's fast forward to the last one. They worshiped the sun. And so, they said, this is the day of the sun. Let's worship the sun. And the pyramids were positioned so that the sun would hit them at certain times and go down the various shafts inside, and positioned also with the various luminary bodies of the heavens, and they would worship these things. And so God said, hey, wait a minute. I'm going to turn out the lights so that you know that I'm God and you're not. Now, this is something that would strike Pharaoh himself, because he was supposedly the sun god, Amon-Re. And he was in charge of the sun that they saw by day, but also the sun by night that went down by the river Styx. And so when God said, I'm going to turn off the sun, this was showing that he, not Pharaoh, was in charge of the luminary bodies. And he did this. You see, he was clearing up cognitive distortions. Now, in the New Start Lifestyle program, we do this all the time. People come, they cry out for help, and then they come to the New Start program, and they have many different ideas about what they should eat, about what they should drink, about what they should do. And we actually show them the scientific studies. We show them the things that help them see that what they were believing was not particularly accurate. And then they begin to change. They begin to study by study, lecture by lecture, study. And of course, we teach them about nutrition. We teach them about how to exercise and exercise with them. We teach them that the strongest drink, the drink that sinks battleships, is water, and how to drink that instead of other drinks. We teach them about the sun and how it works. We'll talk about that in a minute. And about how temperance, the moderate use of that which is good and the total abstinence of that which is bad, is the best thing to do. Don't overdo it. Don't underdo it. Temperance. Air, how fresh air is positive for their bodies and for their minds. And then rest, daily rest, weekly rest, Sabbath rest, salvation rest, rest. And then trust, that is putting your faith or exercising your faith, trust that God is in charge of all these things. And that's what we learn in the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch is actually the New Start program in the Bible. Next, God ordered a blood test. And this test was, he said, look, you either need to put blood over the doorposts of your dwellings, or there will be a death in your family. And of course, where did they get that blood? They had to get it from an animal. And what kind of animal do you think they had to get the blood from? It was the blood of a lamb, and that was a clean animal. Now let's talk about clean animals for a minute, because the Old Testament talks about it, the Pentateuch, the book that shows us, those first five books that show us how to cleanse ourselves. Look at Noah. Noah built an altar to the Lord and took every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So Noah, way back in Genesis chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9, 10, and 11, all the way up to the time of the flood, he knew even before the flood what was clean and what was unclean. There are clean animals and there are unclean animals. Now, these clean animals, you may eat every animal that has a split hoof, completely divided, and that chews the cud. They process their food. They have a split hoof. And of all the creatures living in the water, the seas and the streams, you may eat any that has fins and scales. Now, this is what the Bible says. It's clean. Don't get near the unclean. Don't mix them. Leviticus 11, 13 through 20. Birds other than scavengers were also pronounced clean. Now, in our own culture today, if this would have been followed, many of these viruses that have been developed would never have developed, because they're saying they developed in these wet markets. And they developed where you had unclean animals mingled with other unclean animals. And somehow the viruses kind of formed and bound together. I'm not sure of all the anatomy and physiology of it, but they know for sure that many times these viruses have come from these wet markets. They've come from these areas where you have unclean mixing with clean individuals or clean animals, or actually mixing with humans. And this is causing all kinds of problems. And, you know, still amazingly enough, people will eat unclean meat. So isn't the Bible kind of intelligent? So ultimately, they took the blood from the clean animals, they put it on the doorposts, and those who did that were saved, but those who did not suffered as a result. Now, another thing about blood you should know, this is a lasting ordinance for all generations to come, that wherever you live, you must not eat any fat or any blood. So if you do eat meat, which is not the preferred diet, if you can have fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables, but if you do eat meat, eat clean meat, but then don't have any fat or any blood. Why not? Well, in the fat, of course, all the diseases are consolidated, and all of the different harmful things are actually consolidated in the fat. And of course, there are blood-borne illnesses. Deuteronomy 12, 16. You must not eat blood. Pour it out on the ground like water. So, you know, when I go to Jerusalem, there's the section where you have the Christian section, and then you have the Jewish section. The Jewish section, all the blood has all the blood has been taken out of the meat that's for sale, and there's no flies, and there's no insects around at all. There's no blood. But in the other section, the Christian section, where they don't have that, they have flies swarming all over, and you can just see how illness comes as a result of that. Now, these were not just Old Testament ideas. In the New Testament as well, in Acts chapter 15, verse 20, Paul, writing to how people should be related to who are Gentiles, said, "We write to them that they abstain from pollution of idols, from fornication," that's those sexual laws in Leviticus 18, "and from things strangled," that's how you kill blood. In other words, they strangle it, it keeps the blood in it, "and from blood." So both the Old Testament and the New Testament said this is the best way to do things. And in fact, like I said, these blood-borne diseases are quite amazing. According to the CDC, HIV is a virus spread through body fluids that affects specific cells of the immune system. That's called the CD4 cells, or the T killer cells. Over time, HIV can destroy so many of these cells that the body can't fight off infections or disease. When this happens, HIV leads to AIDS. And where did this come from? By the way, there's no effective real cure. They just give an antiviral that tries to fight off and keep the viral load down so that the T cells can actually attack them. Well, where did HIV come from? Here's the CDC. Scientists have identified a type of chimpanzee in West Africa as the source of HIV infection in humans. They believe that the chimpanzee version of HIV most likely was transmitted to humans and mutated in HIV when humans hunted these chimpanzees for meat. So there you have it. Even today, the CDC and other people, they're saying exactly what the Bible said. There's clean, there's unclean. Stay away from the unclean, or you're going to get viral infections that you cannot fight off. And I think many of us heard about this, how you can have novel infections that you never really could fight off. Now, they can keep this under control now, but it's fascinating that we see that the Bible is correct. What about red meat and heart disease? The cholesterol and saturated fat content of lean Red meat is not that high. There's something else contributing to the risk of cardiovascular disease. Cholesterol is still needed to clog the arteries, but trimethylamine in oxide, TMAO, changes how cholesterol is metabolized, like the dimmer on the light switch, and can make it quite hazardous and lead to heart disease. But not only that, we also know that red meat or red or blood in the meat can also lead to colorectal cancer and other things. And basically, if you tell me what you're eating, if it's a plant-based source, many people can now say this is the type of cancer you're going to be set up for as well. So not only were they supposed to eat the right things, drink the right things, and etc., they were supposed to leave Egypt. And how did they leave Egypt? Did God come and give them a super shuttle? Did he come and pick them up on a jet? Did he come with a helicopter? No. They were supposed to walk. And they walked out of Egypt. And so they had to exercise as they left. And is it good for us to exercise as well? Of course, here at Weimar, we have the New Start Lifestyle Program. And many times we're walking around the loop. There's a half mile loop around the center campus. People, when they get here, sometimes can't walk at all, but they start walking that loop, and by the end of it, they're walking maybe even miles. And as they're walking, that exercise is, it's like a drug. It helps them in so many ways, mentally, emotionally, mentally, and of course, physically, as they're burning those calories. They ultimately are burning off that fat. Now, what did God do to remind them of his power? As they left Egypt and as they came out of Egypt, as they crossed the Red Sea, he introduced a song to them, singing. And that song was, "I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea." You might know that song. "I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea." Great song. And we used to sing it as a round in my days back in Michigan when I was going to the seminary. We sang this in our class, our sanctuary class. And oh, it was beautiful as we sang together. But it was hearkening back to that time where the Lord triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea. That is, the Egyptians were taken care of and God's people were protected. And there's something about music. You know, the psalm book of the Bible, the book of Psalms, actually has 15 songs. They're called the Songs of Ascent. And they start in Psalm 120 to 134. And those songs start elevating you. They take you from the being down and out, and they start moving you on up. And in fact, I was going to talk about this at a camp meeting I was invited to, but I switched the messages to talk about prophecy and health. But those Psalms are powerful as they lead people from despondency and depression all the way up to unity with one another and God. There's a song we learn in the Depression Recovery Program here that you may know as well. And if you don't, I want to teach it to you. It goes like this. "I don't like it, I don't like it, it's okay, it's okay. I can stand it anyway, I can stand it anyway, I'm all right, I'm all right." Now, this is a great song. If you're just in a bad situation, you're feeling down, you start singing, "I don't like it, I don't like it, but it's okay, I can stand it, I'm all right." Now, this actually has great application if you go to the mall with your kids. I know I went to the mall with my kids, and they sometimes have wanted things that I didn't think they were that great, and so I said, "No, you can't get that." Oh, man, they would start to talk to me, and then I just start singing this song. "I don't like it, I don't like it, it's okay." And you know what? Somehow that just cured their desire to have this, and they kind of disassociated with me. Maybe you shouldn't use the song that way, but I'm just telling you, it's a very practical song. "I don't like it, it's okay." Now, what kind of drink did God provide for them? Do you think he gave them Pepsi or a Diet Pepsi or Mountain Dew or Sierra Mist? Some people say, yeah, it was Mountain Dew because it was water out of the rock. And that's exactly what happened. Instead of giving them the date drinks and the heavy sugared drinks of Egypt, he switched the drink to being water. Now, drinking water is one of the best things that you can do to cleanse your system. The solution, again, to pollution is dilution. And water will heighten your reaction time. It will take away the substance into your body that are not actually needing to be there. This is the whole idea of how the kidneys work and the bladder works, and we need to be well hydrated. What kind of food did they want to eat? Well, they wanted to go back to their bad habits. They wanted to hear good news about their bad habits. They wanted to have flesh foods. They specifically at one point in the Old Testament said, "We want quail." They began to wail for quail. And so God gave them what they wanted. Ultimately, you can eat or drink or do whatever you want to do. God tries to give you the right thing, but you're able to do whatever you want to do. And this is what they did. They went for the quail. But then God, when he was in charge, what kind of food did he provide? Every day he brought them what was called manna. Manna means, what is it? They didn't know what it was. And many times in the New Start Lifestyle program, by the way, we have an online edition as well. You can take this course online. In the New Start Lifestyle program, people come, and this is a picture of people coming to one of our programs in one of my churches years ago, and they're looking at the food. They go, what is that? What exactly is that? They've never seen it before. They've never seen the fruits, the nuts, the grains. The average American eats just 6 to 8 really, of the same foods day in, day out. Problem is, they're the wrong foods. And they looked at it and they said, what is that? Anyway, so he put them on this food, seeds. Now, many times, seeds like pumpkin seeds and almonds and coriander seeds, these are high in omega-3s, and they really help us. Coriander especially, which is what was in manna, was used as a folk medicine to relieve anxiety and insomnia. Is anyone out there struggling from anxiety and insomnia? Then coriander seed or cilantro. That's where you get cilantro from, the plant. But the seeds are very medicinal. What about almonds? Almonds were pictured in the sanctuary as well. They contain B vitamin, folate, and the amino acid tyrosine, which helps, you know, your mind and your thinking, and also the neural, it's a precursor to dopamine, which makes you feel good and as well. Also lowers bad cholesterol and raises good cholesterol, almonds. So God prescribed not only what they should eat and drink, he also said when. And he said, look, get up in the morning to get your food. Get out there when the sun is coming up. So they had their light therapy. And they had eaten the right foods high in tryptophan. They then were changed into hydroxytryptophan because they were out there and they had those B vitamins and they had sunlight. And then that's changed into serotonin, which is the happy chemical. But that's not just it. The lights went out. They had to go to sleep. They did not eat late at night. And as a result, there was no insulin. Insulin will block this, by the way, the changing from serotonin into melatonin. But they only ate in the morning and then not at night. And so they were not only have serotonin, but they had melatonin, which was rebuilding their mind and rebuilding their ability to think correctly as well. And this is why we recommend that you don't eat late at night, 5 hours before you go to bed, so that you can have that same thing happening. So what was given to stop, better yet, prevent these distortions from occurring? Remember, there were 10 plagues when they left Egypt. But then God replaced it, those distortions, with 10 truths that came in the 10 commandments. And what teaching tool did God use to summarize this plan and purpose for his people? The sanctuary, actually. And so the sanctuary was what was seen in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And remember, Leviticus chapter 16, the heart of the Pentateuch, and the heart of that book, was the book that was alluded to by Daniel chapter 8. And so when it said in Daniel chapter 8, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed, there was going to be a group of people that would come and actually study the Pentateuch, those first five books of the Bible, and they would discover that this prophecy not only was a prophecy of salvation, mentally speaking, but also physically speaking. They would move from unclean animals to clean animals, better yet, to bread and grapes. Better yet, to manna and almonds. And the fruits, nuts, and grains diet of Genesis 1:29 would come back again. And their body would be fitted to be the temple of the Holy Spirit. And whatever they ate, or whatever they drank, or whatever they did, they would do all to the glory of God. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Isn't this kind of an amazing? That this prophecy was not just a prophecy with numbers, it was a prophecy of health. And at the end of time, God will have a people that desire to fear him and give glory to Him. Now that word fear, the fear of the Lord leads to life, and he who has it will abide in satisfaction. He will not be visited with evil. Proverbs 19:23. And this is what happens. When we follow this, we see it again and again in the New Start program. When we follow this, God really steps up. Now let's just review. It was offered because of their cry. It included adequate exercise, music therapy, water, complex carbohydrates, breakfast and light and supper cycles, and appropriate light and dark cycles, CBT, or cognitive behavior therapy given by God. And weekly, they were reminded of God's grace by worshiping on the Sabbath day. And this is why people, even today, are taking a second look at what the Bible says about health. Now, was the program successful? Well, ultimately it was, but not for many that first time. They stayed out there for 40 years, bickering, complaining, even though they had miracles every day. And God never designed that. And He doesn't design you to complain and whatnot. He's provided an abundant life. You don't have to have any of the diseases of the Egyptians. As you follow His will and His way, He wants you to have a cleansed life. On the 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. It's not just about His temple, it's about your temple. He desires this for you. And you don't need to crave the wrong things like they did, wanting the quail, but just rest in what He says. And when you follow Him, the journey is so much easier. You know, they stayed out there for 40 years. But they could have got to Canaan in just 10 days. We see it all the time here at the New Start program, 18 days. We see it in the Depression Recovery program, 10 days. And people, as they follow these things, maybe 40 years of disease is done away with in just 10 days. So this prophecy and the people of this prophecy can help you. And that key text can become your reality. Under 2,300 days, then not only that sanctuary be cleansed, but your sanctuary will be cleansed because God has said it. May God bless you as you follow His will and His way.